You're listening to Get Fed Today, one podcast designed to provide the Christian a hearty Bible study 5 days a week. While our mission is to showcase a variety of different Bible teachers, if you want to access more content from a particular pastor, simply listen to the end of the episode for additional information. On behalf of the entire team at Get Fed Today, it is our prayer that today's episode encourages your growth in the grace and knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Here we have in Matthew 7:12, in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, well, toward the end of it actually, this famous sermon that Jesus gave, we have, if the Sermon on the Mount is the gem in a ring, this verse, verse 12, is the apex of the gem. This really says it all in regard to what it is that God requires of us. Verse 12, he says, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Now, we recognize this as the golden rule, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And this little verse is a whole section. In fact, it outlines volumes of law and equity and justice in our dealings with each other. And I love how in just a simple verse, the Lord gets across this incredible message, this rule, this rule of conduct, this basic standard. You may not believe this, I'm sure, but one of my great longings is to learn to say a lot in a few words. I know that's hard for you to believe, but it is my desire to be able to condense the things, the truth of God, into a simple package where you can use it and hold on to it. And Jesus does that masterfully here. I want to look at this from the backward on to the beginning. But he says, this is the law and the prophets. Do you know, this rule, this golden rule, is not anything new. In fact, it's all there in the Old Testament. In fact, when you're reading the Old Testament and you're reading about the laws, sometimes you think, oh, so constraining, 613 laws of the Old Testament, all of these rules and regulations that people think of religion, rules and regulations. But in reality, this little rule sums up all of the law and the teachings. In the Old Testament, you'll read things like, well, for example, Exodus 23:4. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again. That's a law. Now imagine, put yourself in that situation. You're walking in your field and all of a sudden you see your sworn enemy. You know, you don't like him. He doesn't like you. You've been at odds with each other. You see his ox somehow has escaped from his corral, walking free. Now you got two thoughts. One is, good for him. I hope he loses that ox for good. And the other thought is, oh man, his ox, I'd hate that if that were me. You know, I got to take it back to him. Well, the law requires that you return it to him, even if it's your enemy. Now, that's a great law. That law we would admire. We admire people that deny themselves vengeance or, you know, retaliation of any sorts, and they actually would do something beneficial for someone. This is the law. There's another law, Exodus 22:21. You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You know, again, these are laws. Now, no one could argue with the goodness of these laws. Don't take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, Leviticus 19:18. And if there's a poor man among your brethren within any of your gates in the land which the Lord God has given you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother, Deuteronomy 15:7-8. Proverbs 25:21, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water to drink. These are good laws. I mean, it's amazing how the Lord is really expressing in many different codes, in this simple rule, he sums them all up. Loving your neighbor, loving God with all your heart, loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, the amazing thing, that this law, really, it comes down to what is right and wrong. Most people will argue today, well, you know, what may be right for you may be wrong for someone else. How do you really know what is right or wrong these days? You know, people will say that, and that may sound good in philosophy class. But you know, the fact is, you know very well what is good, what is right, because you know what you would like. See, you know what you would like, how you would like to be treated, how you would like to have people deal with you there is the very goodness written in your own heart that you know is the right thing to do. You know, there may be sociopaths who are devoid of conscience and may not comprehend these things, but for 99% of the people in the world, this standard is written on their heart. They don't have to guess what is right or wrong. You know, oftentimes you'll hear people argue, or they'll say something appealing to this higher standard. They'll say something like, well, I was there for you when you were sick, and you weren't there for me. Or I helped you build your shed, and you won't help me with my laundry room project. Or I gave you a piece of my apple, and you won't even give me a piece of your orange. Now, the funny thing is, you hear people argue, they are always appealing to a standard of right and goodness and what is just. And no one will argue with that standard. They won't say, oh, forget your standard. No, they'll always excuse themselves as to why their situation doesn't fit that standard. Well, you know, you were there for me when I was sick, but you've got a much longer sickness. It was hard for me to be there for you. Or I helped you with your tool shed, or you helped me, whatever the illustration was. People will have an excuse. Yours was much harder. Or apples and oranges, you know, they're not the same. You know, in each case, we appeal to the standard, but we don't attempt to deny the standard. You know, even if there were no Ten Commandments, do you know if there are no Ten Commandments, this rule of law written in our heart would be enough to guide us. However, it wouldn't be enough to help us actually practice it. There's where the problem is, because this is a high standard, much higher than we have the ability to, by our human nature, to fulfill. Now, we're also told that Jesus is not original here. You might have heard other philosophers, other statements by men of the past say something very similar to this. Greek King Nicoli said, do not do to others the things which make you angry when you experience them at the hands of other people. Sounds similar. Socrates said, what stirs your anger when done to you by others, do not do to others. Aristotle said we should bear ourselves toward others as we would desire they would bear themselves toward us. And Confucius said, what you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. Even Hillel, the famous Jewish speaker, said, do not do to your neighbor what is hateful to yourself. Now, what is apparent in each of these philosophers' statements? They're all saying pretty much the same thing, but they're approaching it from the negative side. Don't do to others what you would not want them to do to you. And by nature, that's good. That's real good. If you could live your life that way, and of course there are very moral people that say, I don't hurt anybody. I've never killed anybody. I don't commit adultery. I'm not doing anything to hurt anybody. I'm okay, right? No, actually that's not enough. Because that's just the negative. Jesus is actually saying to do to others what our best expectations are of treatment by them. That's from the positive. To actually think in terms of what it is you would like done for you. This is your marching orders. Imagine how this works out practically in all of our relationships. Consider how you'd want to be treated and deal with each other that way. How many of you sold a car in the last year or so? Anybody here? Last couple years? Okay, I know I'm not going to embarrass you. But you know, there's something about any business transaction we do that brings out oftentimes the natural selfishness in us. I mean, which of us don't want to get the best deal, right? Which of us don't want to get the most amount of money for that vehicle that we're selling? So we advertise it and we make it sound a little better than it really is. We put it out there, we put the price higher, knowing that it's going to be negotiated down, so even if we get this price, we can go away going, yeah, I got a good deal. But have you ever stopped to think about the other person? Are there things that you're not disclosing about that vehicle that later on they're going to find that radio button falls off when they try to pull it, or the little thing under the carpet is, you know, gets wet and moist and it causes some mold? And there's always some little thing that, well, you don't want to tell them that because they'll knock more money off the price. Well, you know, this whole rule of law, practically speaking, leads us to now do something that's quite interesting. To actually disclose all the problems in the car. Last car I sold, you know, it was just an amazing thing how, you know, I told them everything was wrong with it. And they're looking at me like, why are you telling me this? I would have never discovered that. But you know, I got great pleasure out of telling them everything. Because I put myself in their shoes. I'd want to know. And I'd want to have a fair price for it. So the amazing thing happened. In the past, where I've sold cars and I've really stretched and I've got the most out of it, and I go away and I boast to my friends, "You can't believe the deal I got." There's something distasteful about that in the end. Because I have to keep telling myself, well, that was good. My conscience is bothered because I didn't tell them about this. I should have, but they'll find out. It's not that big of a deal. But my conscience was bothering me, so I had to keep telling myself it was okay. Well, it's just business. Nothing personal. How many times have you heard that? It's just business. Nothing personal. But what a joy it was to actually leave from a transaction where they got a good price, and they got a fair deal, and I got a fair deal, and you know, we're both happy, and it was wonderful. Slept well that night. Well, this in a sense is the Lord's giving to us this standard rule that we never have to really guess what is right. It's already there. How would we want to be treated? How would we want in our best expectations? Because ultimately, we're very foolish and corrupt when we seek for our own temporal advantage at the expense of others. See, living in this world, we've got to remember, is really just a test. And you know, people really go to great lengths to deny themselves in college things so that they can prepare for that final and take that test. They deny themselves sleep. They'll deny themselves parties or give up shopping or pampering themselves or doing fun things so that they can get a good grade on that exam. Well, you know, one day we're going to be standing before our examinator and he's going to examine us. And we're in this testing process. What are we going to do to prepare ourselves for that? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, what's going to matter is how I responded to the Lord's direction for my life. And here it is, summed up in a very simple statement. Whatever you want men to do for you, do also to them. You know, in other aspects, this applies as well. Whether it be in giving, you would want someone to help you when you're in need. Are you spying out needs in others' lives that you can be a blessing to them? You'd want people to forgive you when you've blown it, when you've messed up, when you've made a mistake, when you've sinned. Are you forgiving? Do you give people the benefit of the doubt? You want them to give you the benefit of the doubt. You don't want them to take an evil report about you and believe it immediately without coming to you first. Do you do that? Do you give people that opportunity? Do you show mercy? You want to be shown mercy. Are you merciful? Are you harsh and demanding and uncaring? Do you want people to be gracious to you? Are you gracious? Are you faithful? You want people to be faithful to you, to keep their word? Do you keep your word? You see, in every respect, we could look at this and how we don't even need to know the Ten Commandments or the law or any of the precepts. All we need to know is what I like. And to me, one of the most amazing features about this is this. You see, God does something here. The Lord Jesus does something so fantastic, so amazing, because he actually takes that which he knows of us to be, well, quite self-centered, and he turns that around so that he turns this self-love into a rule of treating others. Isn't that amazing? He can actually take one of our weaknesses, one of our tendencies to think about ourselves first, turn it around so that he can actually use that for good. Because after all, so many people want to know, well, what does the Bible say about this or that? Or what about this situation? And sometimes you'll hear people say, well, you know, the Bible really doesn't say anything about that, so it's okay. Well, you know, you're betraying yourself by that, because the Bible doesn't have to give you all the codes. In fact, you know, there's only, even if you looked at all of the Old Testament laws, there's only 613. That's not a lot. In comparison to those of you who are in business, you know the regulations and the rules and all of the things you have to learn in order to keep a business and do the right things and fill out, you know, the forms and all the requirements. Do you know that I was reading some time ago, I don't have a fixation on cabbage, believe me, but I was quite interested to know that there are over 13,000 pages of government regulations on the sale of cabbage in this nation. Did you know that? I know that you probably didn't know that. You're going to go away with an interesting piece of information there. But it just shows you that how many rules and regulations have to be applied to everything, because people are always trying to find a way around the regulation, some loophole. The Lord doesn't have to give a code and an answer for every detail and every relationship and every situation. Why? It's right here. Simply do unto others what you would want them to do for you. Very simple. Are you living by that? Well, you see, in summing up the law, this essentially is what Jesus also sums up when he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, people have argued, well, you got to love yourself before you can love your neighbor then, right? That bit of psychobabble doesn't really fly when you understand what he's saying. In reality, you see, we already do look closely at ourselves of what we would like. That's natural. We know how we want to be treated. We know how we want to feel. We want people to deal with us. So now we know how we can be toward others. That's the practical side. What would you like? See, what we want and what others want actually is the source of all the clashes in the world, all of the problems. We discuss economic issues, political problems, societal problems, but it all comes down to what I want and what others want, that they don't mix. Well, this rule would turn that around. Now I know what I want, so I actually can be that toward others. This is the spirit of the law. You know, the law speaks about returning a lost ox to your neighbor. It's because the gist of it is you're putting yourself in his shoes and you're thinking, man, I'd really be bummed if I lost my ox. I'd really be bummed if somebody didn't return him. I'd really want someone to return my ox if he got out. And so now that's my guideline, since I care. We praise this golden rule. The truth is, however, we've got a problem. We admire it, we look at it, we want everybody to be this way, but we ourselves fall far short of this. What is the problem? Well, there is no problem in the sense that Jesus is giving us a rule here of life that is, he's doing exactly what he's intending to do. And what is the intent? Well, what is the purpose of the law? Do you remember the three purposes of the law when we were looking at this before? Jesus didn't come to destroy the law or the prophets, but to fulfill them. What's the purpose of the law? Remember, the purpose of the law was, number one, to limit the amount of transgression in the world. Because if you didn't have any laws, you would have anarchy. So that's number one. Number two, it's to reveal to the world their guilt. That's why the law is there, so we would see how guilty we are. Now, there are those who respond to that. Look, I don't want any of your stinking morality. I'm going to live my life. I don't need to hear any rules or regulations from you. Don't tell me what to do. The problem is that they're guilty. They don't want to have that guilt. So they'd rather just change the law. But you see, they can't, because it's written in their heart. They feel guilty even doing something to somebody that they knew was wrong, because they wouldn't want someone to do that to them. So they know already it's there. The law is meant to be a mirror to reveal the sin. And it was meant, finally, thirdly, and most importantly, it's a tutor to lead us to Christ. You see, if I see where I am not like Jesus, where I lack, where I'm not that person that I really want to be, and I'm honest with myself, then I'm going to need a Savior. I'm going to need someone to help me. And I see in you, there's a power, there's a life, there's a joy, there's something in you. And I find out it's from Jesus who's touched your life. I'm going to be inclined. This lack in my life is going to lead me to God through his son, Jesus. So this basic rule of life performs its highest function, its most important purpose, to show us that we're guilty, because honestly, we don't live this way. This passage is confrontational. See, I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm not here just to give you this big up. This is not motivational. This is kind of embarrassing. You see, because I've always felt I don't want to preach. Like Paul the Apostle says, as a general rule, he did not want to preach on anything that he has not been accomplished in his own life. Well, I have to stand before you and say, I confess, I am far short of this. We understand what he's saying here. See, as a young Christian, I became painfully aware that I was very self-centered. I didn't see it, but as I started to grow in the Lord and see how little I really loved people and how little I really thought of others, and I was always thinking of myself, and I was going through this real difficult time. One week, I was just thinking of all of the people that annoyed me and the situation I was in. I was having my own little pity party. Woe is me, poor me. And the Lord just spoke to my heart. And I was confronted with the thought, I really don't love people. And it really hit me. But you know what it made me do? It made me draw near to the Lord. Lord, give me that love. Give me that love. And you know, something changed in me that week. Because I began treating others, not because I felt that they deserved it, but because now there was something that happened in me. So that moved me to depend upon the Lord. So we look at the basis of this rule, the law and the prophets. We look at the high standard of this. This is high. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. Folks, what's the secret? How can we do this? How can we live this way? Well, I didn't notice, rather until recently, that the secret actually is right here in the very verse itself. It's right here. But before I tell you that secret, before I reveal that secret word, it's not really secret. It sounds good when you say secret, right? But it's there. Before I share it with you, I want to ask you a question. Those of you who are Bible students, those of you who are familiar with the Bible, is there a passage in the Bible that you can think of that says, resist the devil and he will flee from you? How many of you recognize that? Anybody? Raise your hand. Okay, quite a few of you. Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but the Bible does not say, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Oh, yes, it does, Pastor. I've got it right here in my Bible. No, actually, the verse says, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Now, I point that out is because a lot of times we look at the Bible and we pick things out and we have something out of context. And out of context, you're not getting the full meaning of it. If I say to you, resist the devil and he will flee from you, that's only half true. Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Well, in this passage, most people quote this, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or in this translation, whatever you want men to do to you, do also for them. The golden rule, right? That's what you'll see quoted. That's what you'll see all the time. That's what you'll hear. But there's one problem with that. There is a little problematic word in front of that. And it's that word, therefore. Now remember, you got to go in the book to see what that therefore is there for. Because if you miss this, then you're going to miss the context and you're going to miss how is it possible that you could live this high standard. So look at the context. Didn't we look at this already in Matthew 7, verse 7 through 11? Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man there among you? Is there among you who, if his son asks for a bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? All right, therefore, you see how this fits? He says, how much more will your Father who in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Therefore, see, this context shows the foundation. To expect our prayers to be answered by God with no regard in how we treat others is sheer hypocrisy. When you read this together, you realize that this elevates the expectation to a new level. You see, here you are. You're praying. You're praying for good things. Lord, I want good things. Lord, gimme, gimme, gimme. I need, I need, I need. Please, Lord, help me, help me, help me. We're praying. Now, here's the thing. We're praying, and you know, your Father is so eager to bless you. You're saying, bless me, Lord, bless me. Well, He wants to bless you. He's your Father in heaven. Oh, He wants to bless you more than you can imagine. Therefore, whatever you want men to do for you, do this for them. How is that possible? Well, you see, through prayer, we have all we need as God's children. His bountiful blessings are right there to be poured upon us. But here's the problem. You see, if we are not a channel of those blessings to others, then the flow stops. We're the problem. We are not passing on that which the Lord has blessed us with. We become miserly, not just in referring to money. We become miserly in affection. Miserly with nice comments, miserly with encouraging words, miserly with helping others, miserly with reaching out to others, thinking about others, because we've spent so much time thinking of ourselves because we think we need it all. And then the channel stops. Well, ask, seek, knock. I mean, everything you need is in Him. He's there. He's going to fill you. He wants to bless you. But it happens that the therefore is very important. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you. See, you know what you need because you ask God. You want health. You want money. You want a nice place to live. You want nice things around you. You want to have friends. Well, therefore, be that for others. Encourage others. You know somebody that's not working? Have you helped them find something? Do you maybe use some resources you have to see if you can get them a job? Do you know somebody that's in need? Are you thinking about them? Are you thinking of ways to help them benevolently? Are you thinking about people who don't know the gospel, who've never heard the gospel? And here we sit having all of the blessings of the truth of the gospel, and yet we don't think about so many just even in our backyard, even in our neighborhood, who have never heard or never seen a live testimony of a Christian who is filled with the Spirit and has experienced life in Jesus. See, there is a lot that we need to know, that there's a connection between the Lord's blessing and our being a channel of those blessings. The connection is we ask, we seek, we knock. He's our Father. He's eager to help us and bless us. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. We're like children. You see, it's freeing. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. I talked to somebody last week. They don't know the Lord. I'm praying for them. It's been a long kind of dialogue that we've had. And they recently went through a medical situation. They went on kind of a manic phase where spent and he tells me that he felt wonderful during this time. It was just, he wants to get back to that feeling. He felt just so free. There's no pressure. He just felt like a little child. And I said, it's funny that you should say that, because when I was in college and I had the weight of the world on my shoulders and I had all these worries and concerns and fears and wasn't walking with the Lord, and the Lord got my attention and someone shared the gospel with me and I opened my heart to the Lord, that I remember how I felt like that child again. I felt like, wow, this is amazing. All the fears, all the doubts, all the concerns were gone and washed away, and I had a Father in heaven. It was wonderful. It was like I was His child, and I just felt comforted and encouraged and strengthened and covered. And here we are. You know, we all have need as God's children, but we have access to Him now through His Son. But now our big need is, as we've depended upon Him, our big need is to pass that on. See, if we're sheep in His rich pasture, we won't be ravenous wolves foraging the forest, seeking whom to devour for ourselves. See, you'll make it your life's goal to be good to those who come into your sphere of influence, because you've been greatly treated. See, the world can only come to one conclusion. I will treat others how they treat me. That is so insufficient. But if you start treating others how your Father in heaven treats you, see, you'll find you'll be doing unto them what you would want them to do for you. Because you have a Father in heaven. This is high. But you'll never hear the words coming out of your mouth. What about my needs? What about my issues? What about me? He'll never say it, because you've got a Father in heaven You're not a sheep without a shepherd. You've got a shepherd who leads you beside still waters, who takes care of your needs. But if you're not experiencing that, it could possibly be you've not made the connection. Therefore, you can stop that channel of blessing by stopping all the blessings with you and not passing them on. How ashamed I am, honestly, of how little I've lived this because I failed to see verse 11. I failed to see my Father will give good things to those who ask them. Your character and your person should not be the results of how others have treated you, but the results of what God has done in you. And the question you've got to ask yourself this morning, do you want this power? Do you want this love? Do you want this ability? Or do you want to lower the standard? Do you want to lower the expectation to a bite-sized thing that you can handle? After all, you're only human. Nobody's perfect. So why should I try to be, you know, better than life? I can't. Too much is upon me. See, when you adopt that standard, it's because you've forgotten of the incredible riches and blessing and power the Lord wants to bestow upon you. Don't forget that. But when you remember that now, do unto others how you'd want them to do to you. So maybe for your assignment, it might be good to write on a piece of paper all the things you would love to see others do for you. But be careful, because when you write that down, all you're doing is writing down your marching orders for this week, this year, of how you're to be toward others. Let's pray.
Thank you for listening to Get Fed Today. Today's sermon comes from Pastor Lloyd Pulley. If you enjoy the message, you can learn more about Pastor Lloyd's ministry by visiting www.ccob.org.